Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, journal-style blog posts, and a link to our social media community. And please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
All right, thanks, Josh. And wow, look at where we are here. We are at the Dry Fly Lodge on the North Platte River, right on the river here at the lodge. And today we're going to be talking about the North Platte in Casper, Wyoming. I'm so excited to have both Ryan Anderson and Brendan Billingham with us on the podcast. Guys, thanks for being on our podcast.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man.
So cool to have you on because this is an epic fishery, and I'm so excited to have you guys talk about the North Platte River here in Casper, Wyoming. Ryan, why don't you give our listeners just an overview of the North Platte, because you run Wyoming Fly Fishing.
Yes, sir.
It's a guide service that runs up and down the river, walking and floating. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit about the North Platte River in Casper?
Well, the North Platte out of Casper is great because of the amount of water that we have. You know, we have three completely different tailwaters all on the North Platte, all within an hour of the shop. You know, we have the Miracle Mile, we have Fremont Canyon, and we have, of course, Gray Reef, which is what, you know, most people have heard of. But the Gray Reef section of the North Platte is about 80 miles long. So the great thing about this fishery in central Wyoming is you can kind of get away from the people. You know, it's nice to have your own little slice of heaven out there, and that's what we kind of try to do. Because nobody likes to fish around a bunch of people, you know. If you can get away from them, it makes for a better day on the water. But yeah, I mean, as far as fish numbers and a fishery, there's no place like this on Earth. You know, we below those dams, it just creates these giant bug factories. And as you saw, you know, fishing these last few days, these rainbows get huge, eating all those big bugs, you know, that are floating down under these dams. So, yeah, it's a pretty special place.
The North Platte River. And I want to tell everybody, because we also have Tim Camisa. Tim with Trout and Feather. Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Good to be here.
We've had an amazing 3 days. We also have Harrison Hughes with Black Mountain Cinnabar documenting these past 3 days.
Epic, man.
It's been really incredible. So I just think our listeners are going to get so much out of this podcast because we met at the Denver Fly Fishing Show.
Yep.
And me and one of my teammates there from Fly Fishing Journeys were just having lunch, and the place is packed out. I mean, Denver was huge this year. And we're having lunch, and then I saw you and Bean come over here, Brendan, otherwise known as Bean.
Yeah.
Now, why do they call you Bean before we get into this?
I don't have a real good story.
Not one I can
share. I had it since I was a little kid, you know, Bean. A baby, basically. So, yeah, it never went away. My parents call me Bean.
Oh,
everybody
really?
Else
Even
does.
The folks call you Bean.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, Ryan and Bean were coming through and with their lunch trays, and they're kind of looking around and trying to find a spot to sit. And we just happened to have a couple chairs, and we said, yeah, guys, come over and sit with us. And you guys came over and sat down, mm-hmm. and we just seemed to have great camaraderie right off the bat.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit about our podcast, and you were telling us about Casper and mm-hmm. the North Platte. And quite honestly, I didn't know a ton about the North Platte.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, in some circles, it's known pretty well. I think a lot of people down in Colorado know about it. They come up and fish with us. But no, I mean, it's not as well known as some of the tailwaters out west, and we kind of like it that way. And
Well, we're about to change that right about. We're going to fix that real fast.
Yeah. Well, we love taking people down the river, so hopefully some people will want to come out.
Before we get into the fishery, Tim, can you just tell our folks here sure. listening on the podcast about the story that we did our podcast and then the following week and what happened?
Oh, man. The podcast with Rob went down at the International Fly Tying Symposium. We had it was a great podcast. We had a blast. That's where I first met Rob. So fast forward to this past winter. My wife and I were out steelhead fishing. I had just found this incredible run of steelhead in northwest Pennsylvania. We're out on the water. I'm trying to get my wife into her first fish, and sure enough, she hooks her first fish. It was just, everything was just perfect. It all came together. We had our three-year-old. He was two at the time. He was on my back, so we kind of moved downstream. I land this fish for my wife. She's just giddy. We start taking pictures. You know, it's the first fish. I mean, we've all been there. And it's her first steelhead. I mean, it was just incredible. And I look up, and here comes two fly fishermen. They just post up right into the pool, right where we were fishing. And I thought, oh, come on. And we're not trying to get into a confrontation or anything like that. I'm with my two-year-old, my wife. So I look up, and I say to them, hey, guys, if you don't mind, my wife was just fishing there. I'm just trying to get her a few fish today. Do you mind moving on? They're like, absolutely. So they come down. You know how it goes on the river. We just start talking. I make the mistake of taking off my sunglasses, and they go, you're Tim Camisa. And I said, yeah, do you watch my YouTube? And they said, no, we just heard your podcast on Fly Fishing Journeys with Rob Giannino. I said, oh, no, not Rob.
Yes.
No.
Sorry about your hole, buddy.
No, it's
how do you think we found this hole,
yeah,
right?
It's right. It's Instagram. It's all, Google Maps. Goodbye.
But wouldn't we love that for some of our listeners to come out here to Casper? Because kind of growing up on the East, you know, we have our own patterns. I hadn't heard about the North Platte. And maybe I heard about the North Platte, but I didn't realize how epic a fishery it was.
Mm-mm. Rob, before you let Ryan kind of take us through the North Platte, this is kind of the thing that really just jumped to me, Ryan. On some of these tailwaters that I've fished over the years, they're managed for other things. They're managed for cold water. They're managed as a resource for something else. And it seems different here. And you kind of alluded to that whenever we were out fishing with you. Could you just tell people about how the state of Wyoming, or is it federal? I mean, it seems like they really take care of this for the fishermen.
Yeah, I mean, the Bureau of Rec actually works hand in hand with the Game and Fish, you know, which is awesome. And basically what they did was they set up the flush and flows. Basically what a flush and flow is they jack up the water in the spring. They did it about 3 weeks ago, Bean?
I think so, yeah.
Yep. Basically, they take it from your normal flow of 500 CFS, they jack it up to 4,000 CFS, and they only do it at night so it doesn't mess with the fishing. But what it does is it cleans out all the silt, all the fine sediment, and it exposes those gravelly shelves that, you know, we were floating over.
Sure.
And it's just better for the fishery because it's better for the spawn. You know, and all these fish that we've been playing with up at Gray Reef are wild born, which is pretty awesome anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you don't see a lot of tailwaters with all wild born fish right below the dam. So yeah, it's pretty cool. We love chasing those wild fish.
Thank you for sharing that. Why don't you give our listeners just a picture of the waterway, like where it starts, how it works, the dams, the flows.
For sure.
That type of thing.
Yeah, so the North Platte starts in Colorado, starts up in the mountains and flows north. It doesn't seem like that'd be downhill, but it is. And it flows into Seminole Reservoir first. You know, around Saratoga is the Freestone area, and that's some good fishing. And then from Seminole into Pathfinder is what's called the Miracle Mile tailwater, which we float and guide. And then from Pathfinder down to Alcova, they run the majority of the water through the mountain in a tube. That's why that Fremont section is so much smaller water, but it has the same big fish. So it's a smaller section of water, less flow, but it, you know, it's awesome fishing. It's more intimate water, you know, pocket water, all that fun stuff. Then it flows into Alcova Reservoir, and below Alcova is Gray Reef, the big section, which is only, you know, 15, 20 minutes from the shop. So it's all right around here, right around Casper. But yeah, I mean, it's great. The access is awesome. There is some private land, you know, up on that upper float that everybody likes. On that first 8 miles, there's a lot of private land, which, you know, can deter people from fishing here. But what that private land actually does is it protects our fishery because people can't jump out and fish to those spawn and fish, you know, stomp the reds, that kind of thing. So, you know, they can throw a streamer over there and pin one, which, you know, none of us do, but they can't stand there and, you know, nuke a red.
Yep.
You know, it keeps them all moving. And it's great for, you know, actually floating a section of river because, you know, a lot of places that do have the high water mark, they use their drift boats, you know, as taxis to get to a spot to wade.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our guides, you know, we're working out of the boat all day. You know, we're back rowing those runs. If we're getting fish, we're hitting the runs 2-3 times, then moving to the next productive hole.
I just want to talk about that because Tim even mentioned it. You know, the way that you back row a pool for us, we had a great day. It's like 65, 70 degrees. We just caught huge rainbows all day long. So I just want to give our listeners to understand kind of how we did it, because this may be a way other people could do it. We floated with a guide, Wyoming Fly Fishing, all day on the first day. That was a Friday for us.
Absolutely. And let's also point out, and I'll just like stop you for just a hair, whenever we took that float, there's a lot of guide services out there. They're basically kind of what Ryan said. They're a taxi. They get you from point A to point B, and that's kind of the system. And the one thing that does separate, I think, Wyoming Fly Fishing from a few others is that, like, I was learning stuff from Ryan along the drift. It was great. He was showing us his little knots. He was just kind of pointing out some stuff, not just the history, you know.
Yeah,
there was, you know, the wildlife, all that stuff's kind of just part of the experience. But if you're trying to become a better fisherman too, I mean, there were things that we picked up throughout that day. It wasn't just, let's catch some fish and get some pictures. It was more than that.
Yeah, the seams, where to cast, where to mend. I think you get a mend, right? Is that part of the program?
Once in a while,
you get a mend?
Yeah.
Well, I was laughing at Rob when the, because we were doing some drone shots, Bean.
Yeah.
And the drone's, you know, ripping over his head, and Rob was like trying not to look at it, you know, because Tim goes, don't look at it. And his line is just dragging through this beautiful run, and Rob's not doing anything, you know, he's just sitting there. And I said to Rob, the whole world just saw your terrible drift.
Mend that line.
Yeah. Mend it.
But there's no audio on the drone, so they couldn't hear me yelling at him.
Well, I have to confess, you know, because you guys are like working hard. You're putting on these spots. You know, we're making these casts.
Sure.
And sometimes I get a little lazy. We're catching so many big 18-plus rainbows here that I'm looking over at Tim. I'm looking at the golden eagle in the sky, and my strike indicator goes down, and like, set the horn! And I miss it, you know? And I'm like, so that's just how it is in these days. So our first day, we went out with Wyoming Fly Fishing. Ryan, just an amazing job. We focused on Grey Reef Dam. We did an amazing float. What was cool about that is just how clean these rainbows are.
Oh, yeah, they're gorgeous. Yeah, they are just beautiful, beautiful fish.
And we're going to talk about, you know, because you mentioned the reds and, you know, the spawning time, because this is April, how you guys work it, because I think it's amazing how you guys actually work an April-type fishing trip.
Yeah.
Because a lot of guides or a lot of people may not understand how important it is to, quote-unquote, mine that red, and how you can still catch a ton of fish without necessarily picking them off the red.
Yeah. Well, basically, the North Platte is kind of a melting pot. You know, back in the day, there still is, but back in the day, the hatchery was located right on the bank of the North Platte, and they were just throwing a lot of different strains of rainbow in there. So these rainbows are spawning, you know, in the same areas, but at different times. So it's pretty crazy. We actually have fish on the reds on the upper 10 miles from pretty much January till June. You're going to see fish sitting on those reds. And so with that said, there's always clean fish in the deeper water. You know, there's always those clean silver fish in the deep green water, which is what we like to target. We don't chase after them when they're, you know, fish where they feed, not where they breed.
Can you talk about how you guys manage not fishing the reds, or how you guys manage getting clients into fish without necessarily targeting those reds?
We have 5,000-6,000 fish per mile. Jeez. And they're not all spawning at the same time. So I mean, you got them staging in and out of those reds, so you can fish that deeper water while they're waiting or resting, and hopefully not get any that are in the middle of spawning. So
yeah, and we just talk to them. We involve them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, guys, put your rods down. We're going to float over this skinny area, you know, like we were doing on the river. You know, and it's cool. It's like, guys, put your, you know, get your polarized glasses on and check this out. You know, there's a couple of really big fish that we're going to just float by and check out. And, you know, it's like looking into an aquarium, because that water's so clear. And a lot of places, it's like Alaska. I mean, you're just parting these huge, you know,
they're
rainbows.
Exploding everywhere. I mean, rainbows are exploding everywhere. We're not talking about 12 inches here.
Right.
We're talking about big rainbows that are just kind of skedaddling because they see that drift boat coming by. And then you can almost see them kind of get back on the red as soon as they go by.
Oh, yeah, they slip right back in there.
Yep. And then, you know, when we're done, we hit the green stuff, we hit the deep stuff. You guys say, get the rods back out, and then we'll fish the pools.
Yep, and that's a good way to do it because it protects the fishery.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool. How we did is, obviously, we went out with Wyoming Fly Fishing. Why don't you talk a little bit about how the guide service works, because it's next to the North Platte River Fly Shop.
Yes, sir. Yep, Platte River Fly Shop and Wyoming Fly Fishing are basically partners. You know, the North Platte River Fly Shop is the fly shop. We're the guide service, and we're just right next door. So if you have anything you need, you know, before you go out on the river with us, you can just pop right next door. But it's my partner, Mark Benom. It's a first-class fly shop. WyomingFlyFishing.com is his website. So
it's a great fly shop. We went in and bought some stuff there and got a set of nippers.
I was just going to talk about those nippers. We could tell that story another time, though.
We don't want to talk about the nippers.
We'll see.
Well, anyway, it's cool how you guys have that kind of symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. No, it's great. You know, and when somebody comes into the fly shop and you know, didn't catch any fish, Mark always sends them over next door to jump in a boat with one of our guides, you know, so it works great.
That changes quite quickly.
Oh, yeah. Well, all you got to do is get in a boat. You know, for, like, beginners out there, the North Platte is an amazing place to learn to fly fish. Because you and I were chatting about that on the river a couple days ago, Rob. You know, basically, there's a lot of fisheries out there where the learning curve is tipped so much that you have to go out, you have to learn to cast for, you know, sometimes 2-3 days before you can pick up a fish. You know, whereas if I can get somebody in my boat, because, you know, the drift boat is a fishing tool, you know, if I can get them to basically flop it out past my oar, I could do some creative oar strokes. I can even mend it a little bit and get them that first fish.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people that are getting into this sport are nervous that they won't do well.
Yeah.
They're nervous that they can't catch a fish. And if you can take that out of the equation, then you're going to have somebody that really listens to you. You know, learn backwards a little bit.
Right.
If you can get that first fish and then be like, okay, this is what you did right and this is what you did wrong, you know.
Yeah.
It's a great teaching tool.
Well, I text Liz, right? We should bring in Liz here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your wife, and she's amazing. She did all these incredible accommodations for us here at the Dry Fly. First of all, we're going to talk about this place. This place is crazy cool. The Caddis and...
The Drake,
yeah.
Yeah, the two units.
Unbelievable. Right on the river. We got a great deck looking over the North Platte. Unbelievable sunsets, sunrises. But Liz is amazing because she set up all these accommodations for us, and we've been emailing back and forth. And why don't you talk a little bit about your other half here.
Yeah, the better half.
The boss, yeah.
No, Liz is awesome. She's the voice on the phone that you're going to get if you give us a call. She does. She takes care of everything. You know, we'll set up your accommodation, set up your lodging, set up your guides. You know, for all the fisheries that we fish, you know, you can basically reserve your guides for that day. And we also, you know, work around weather systems. You know, if the weather's going to be bad, maybe we go hide at Fremont and don't take the boat that day.
Right.
You know, nothing is set in stone. We always work to put you on the best fishing that we can. But the worst thing about it is because she handles all the scheduling and she is also my wife. If I make her mad, I got about 10 days of guiding in a row to figure out what I said wrong, you know.
Flowers. Another set of flowers for you, right?
No, Ryan, you're out again tomorrow.
Bad news.
What did I do?
Well, I'm trying to get to how we've done this trip. And the first day was obviously with the Wyoming fly fishing. And then the next day, we watermastered. And you kind of gave us a great map.
Mm-hmm.
And you showed where we can put in and where we can take out, you know, unbelievable river. And both myself and Tim and Harrison took these water masters down. We got a shuttle. You gave us the number for the shuttle. We shuttled it. And it's just a great river. Now, I have to admit, we did well. We caught some fish. It wasn't quite like the day before where we were banging them on the head all day.
We didn't have our veteran guide. No, we didn't have him putting us in all the right spots. No.
But was it fun, though?
Listen, we had a blast. And I think for anybody out there who's trying to, you know, DIY, if they're not from the Wyoming area, and they come out to this area and they say, hey, I have a boat. I want to bring it out there, and they have a water master, some type of craft. They can do it. What's really nice about Wyoming, it seems like they have some really nice access points for fishermen. There's shuttle services out here, so that's kind of all ready for the individuals. The float itself was just wonderful. I mean, it's a really clean float. There's really nothing we had to worry too much about, except, as Ryan mentioned before, there is some private property, but it's marked. There's these little red markers along the way. Whenever they're red, you know you're about to enter a private section. Whenever it's blue, it's going to be public again. So it's really, really well documented anyway. There's some maps that, you know, the shop has that you can kind of get, and they talk you kind of through that. But I thought it was really, just from that perspective, if you were, I don't want to say a beginner, but at that intermediate level, very easy to just kind of do it yourself and just kind of make your way down the river, at least in the Great Reef section.
And so I think having that, some of those stretches of longer private land made the water masters a little bit of a challenge because if you bust off, now you're trying to put a fly on as you're moving
because
your feet can't touch the bottom there. So having the guide service is pretty cool. So the way we did it, we did the first day with Ryan here in the boat. We did the water masters the second day, and then also you guide over in the Fremont area on foot.
Yes, sir.
And we went out. You kind of showed us where to go. We went out there today, and just amazing.
Yeah.
You're in a gorge.
Oh, man.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, just absolutely gorgeous.
And the fish are huge.
It's like they're the same fish from the Great Reef section, but they're in just tighter water.
Yeah, that intimate pocket water. And
yeah, wonderful. It seemed like before we got there, we knew it was going to be this just incredible, gorgeous gorge. Like, we knew that that was coming. But then we get there, and we're talking to people on the river, and they're like, yeah, well, you can do this section. There's also the meadow, and there's, you know, kind of ways to go back and forth. And some parts were technical. Other parts were just kind of down and dirty. You had your mix in there, and it was really, if you're a wade fisherman, like, and I love the wade myself. Don't get me wrong. I'll fish anyway. But it was nice for this day three to kind of say, we're on foot now. Let's kind of get in here and just, you know, go mono against these rainbows.
Yeah. And big ones, too.
Huge fish.
I mean, it's as wide as a table in some places, and you're pulling out 18, 20-inch fish. It's it's insane.
We caught 20-plus today, and the last fish of the day always, right? With one more fish, we were kind of headhunting for it. We saw it rolling on midges. We hooked it. It was 22 and fat. I mean, it was a poundage fish. And he kind of got a little straight us at the end and busted our 6X off. But I guess that's...
It's just a little kiss goodbye,
kiss
Rob.
Kiss goodbye. Yeah, come back again, see you later. I guess. We'll see you next time.
Now, yeah, it's I arranged that so you come back and see me, buddy.
Thank you. Good job. Good job.
Yeah.
What is your favorite part about the North Platte for being on the river all the time?
You know, I think it's just the chance every day of something that you've never seen in your life fish-wise. You never know what you're going to hook onto. I mean, you can set that hook, get a 30-inch fish.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you're going to get 16-plus fish all day. So that's my favorite part is around each bend, you just each hook set, each eat, you never know.
Mm-mm. And we got rainbows, cut bows. Rob, you and I didn't get a brown. But
we didn't get a brown, but it's not really brown time or when we were fishing. But Mr. Harrison got a big brown today.
Yeah, our buddy got a brown. Yeah, he rubbed that in. Yeah, he really rubbed that in for us today.
Yeah, about 5% of the population, we figure, so.
Yeah, but they're, I mean, some of them are just gators.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, the day that we were floating, another one of my guides came down behind us, and in that first hole, you know, above the cable, he got a 27-inch brown. It was just, you know, new guy to fly fishing, fired it into the first hole.
First cast.
And ended up pulling out a 27. He put it on the tape. So that's you can so cool. You can find them. They're unicorns for sure.
Yeah.
You know, this time of year. But no, I mean, and if people are after big browns, that's Bean and I's favorite thing to do.
Yep.
Is throw the big meat. You know, cover water. Like I said, you know, we have 80 miles below the dam. So, you know, we'll do a nice long float. And you're going to be, you know, throwing a big sock out there to the bank all day, but you know, you're going to knock on a lot of doors, and hopefully, you know, one of those big fish will be home. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
You know, because you're always casting to a new spot, you know, under that bush, behind that rock, and you're just traveling, and the browns on this river are amazing.
They are. They're strong. You know it right away when you get one, too. You know, they bulldog you, and you think it's bottom or a log, and then that log starts moving, and you wonder if you have enough tackle for them. I mean, you know, I run 16.
Those are my favorite problems.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Every time we went to net a fish, I think both Rob and Harrison brought those, you know, those classic like wooden nets.
Oh, no.
And every time they're going to landmine, I'm thinking, oh, no, it's not going to fit in this one. I'm like, boys, we got to get some new nets for you guys. I'm like, these are not big enough. No.
Yeah. Well, I think Rob was trying to steal my boat net. After that day, because you asked me, you're like, can I, do you have another one of those?
I was looking for another one. I wasn't looking for
another one. We needed that one today.
But it was so fun and really just an enjoyable time. And how long have you been guiding, Ryan? Why don't we tell that story?
I've been guiding for 20 years. I guided up in Alaska for 2 years.
Okay.
And then down here ever since.
You grew up in Casper?
Grew up right here in Casper. Bean and I used to skateboard together.
Yeah. Not well. We're big guys, but we still went. Yeah.
Yeah. Grew up right here in Casper, and Bean did too. You know, we just love this place. You know, I mean, it has it all. It has a little ski area on the mountain. It has, you know, this amazing river that we've, you know, got to fish our whole lives. And, you know, lots of fun stuff to do. I have 3 boys that I'm raising and showing all this stuff to, which is a lot of fun. Casper's awesome. So, you know, with 20 years on this river, you know, I got a lot of funny stories of clients and, you know, I've put that together.
No, what about the cell phone story?
No, these guys showed up from the East Coast and they had never been to Wyoming. And so they show up at the fly shop, you know, they check in with Liz and I'm kind of getting their rods ready and everything. But, you know, they're asking me about cowboys, asking me about Indians, and and it was, you know, did you ride a horse to work? And I'm kind of like, dude, you're sitting in my truck, you know. But anyway, the first funny part about that story was I told them which boat and truck were mine, and I said, you know, that rig over there is mine, guys. I'm just going to grab a couple things and be out in a minute. And I come outside, and one of them was sitting in my drift boat on the trailer in the parking lot. So I had to pull him out of there and stick him in the truck and head out. So we're driving out to the river, and you know, this is Wyoming. It's tons of open space, you know, nothing but sagebrush and antelope. And the guy in the front seat just started looking all over, you know, getting all nervous. He's looking out there, and he turns to me and he says, "Well, Ryan, what are they planning to do with this land?"
Well, you have to do something with land. Yeah, if you're from apparently. The East Coast, you have to do something with land.
High rise, you know. But no, I had to make fun of him a little bit. But anyway, long story short, I played a joke on him because there's a gentleman out here, you know, not too far from the dry fly that does like Oregon trail rides. he takes tourists out in these covered wagons, and they go out to this Indian village. So there's these teepees on the bank of the river, and they just sit there all day, you know, because he does these things in the evening. And so this is kind of a barren area of the North Platte. I see these teepees on the bank, and I said, "Holy cow, it's the Indians. Get down."
And he ducked?
No, both of them were looking for a place to hide in a Clackacraft drift boat.
I wish I could have seen that.
Which is pretty hard to find. One of them was stuffed up under the leg lock in the front where you put your jacket.
Indians,
you know?
Huh? He was concerned.
Watch out for those wild Indians. But
don't look them in the eye.
They got the joke when they saw me about fall out of my boat laughing. No, they were fun guys. We had a great time.
While we're talking stories, I have to hear one more.
Uh-oh.
Tell me about the dudes who got on their cell phone before.
I knew you were going there.
Yes,
this is a good story.
I have to hear this story.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So Bean and I met these clients up at the upper section. There was four of them. That was the meet, was right up at the dam. So they get out of their cars, and they're all talking on their phones. And so, you know, I flag them down, and he just holds up a finger like, "Hold on a minute," you know. So we're standing there for a good hour. They're still on their phones. And so finally I, you know, kind of said, "Look, we got to get in these boats. You know, if you guys need to stay on your phones, you can do it, but you have to do it from the drift boat because we're going to move downriver." So they all pile in the boats and we just start floating, you know, because we haven't even, you know, haven't even got their names yet, you know.
There's no fishing going on.
No, just floating down the river.
Talk on the phone in silence.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Absolute, you know, no fishing at all. So we're floating down a ways, and for another 2 hours, we're floating along, doing nothing, just, you know, a little boat ride while they're on their phones. And, you know, it's their day, you know. Finally, the guy in the back hangs up his phone. Well, I got to back up a little bit. About 2 weeks before that, in the outhouse hole on the upper section, I found one of those old flip phones, you know, just the old style flip phone, just sitting in the mud. And I just threw it in my boat picking up trash, you know, threw it in there. And so, anyway, one guy finally hangs up his phone. And he says, "Oh, Ryan, I'm sorry. You know, we all work together. There's a crisis at work, you know, and that's why we're all on our phones." And I said, "Oh, that's fine. But, you know, you're going to have a lot better day if you just power that thing off." And he goes, "Ryan, I'm doing it right now." You know, he powered down. And the other three guys are still on the phone. And so I pulled out that old muddy cell phone. And I said to the guy, I said, "Let's play a trick on your buddies." I said, "You hold this thing up to your ear and act like you're conducting business." So he holds this thing up to his ear, and we, you know, float right next to Bean's boat with the other two guys, and he's got it up to his ear, and he's like, "Yeah, yeah, that all sounds pretty good." And I stood up out of my rower seat, and I grabbed it off of his ear, and I threw it towards the other boat into the river, and I said, "No cell phones on the river!" And I mean, you should have seen these guys' face. They just, "I got to call you back," you know.
Put that forward.
Yeah, all three phones go into their pockets.
And zip up their bags and everything, and they were right on it after that.
And we kind of kept the joke going till lunch. You know, I kind of kept the grumpy guide persona going. And I went up into the bushes for a minute, and I could hear the guys talking to each other, and they're like, "Did he really throw your phone in there?" Oh, no. He's like, "No, dude, he was messing with you."
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah.
But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I kind of forced them to have a good time. You know, I mean, they would have talked on their phone all day, but, you know, we ended up catching a whole bunch of fish and having a great day, so.
And I think what you're hearing here is within Ryan's stories, he's just these short too, is this is what happens on the river. You're catching big fish, you're having a good time, he's telling stories, you're having fun, he packed a great lunch, and you're just on the beautiful North Platte. And you know, sometimes fishing can be really hard, and we showed up at the shop in the Wyoming Fly Guy Service. He said, "All right, we're going to go up here, we're going to bang on a bunch of fish, we'll catch some fish, we're going to do this, we're going to do that."
Crazy confidence.
Oh, yeah, the confident guy thing was
we
like...
We were like, "Who the heck is
this?" Who's this guy? Let's just
remove Ryan for a second. Is he always this cocky? Let tell us about... I know he's your boss. He's not listening anymore.
He was pretty subtle with you guys, actually.
He's like, "We're going to get fish." And then the best part, we found out later, we lost a fish that day. There was a fish that we lost, and he looked right at us, and he said, "Don't worry, we're going to get a bigger one."
Oh, yeah.
And we found out, he says that to everybody.
Always. Every time it's...
We all do, actually.
Yeah, they're great lines.
That line's guide crap. You know, every guide in the country knows that line.
But that false confidence, it helps.
Yeah, we knew that.
Well, you know, usually with a nice fish, would be like, "You want a picture?" And they're like, "I don't know." I'm like, "Now we're going to get a bigger one and throw it back in."
That's it.
You know, it's just...
We saw that happen quite a few times.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, "Oh, no, we'll get you a bigger one. It's no problem." No, we're fortunate. Very fortunate up here.
Yeah.
How many guides... actually work with you, Ryan?
We have a staff of about 20, 22 guides, jeez, but that's, you know, that's full and part-time. I'm not throwing 20 boats in, you know, at the upper section. But, you know, we also have a permit over in Thermopolis on the Bighorn. And so throughout these three tailwaters and Thermopolis, you know, that's how many guides we employ. But some of them are part-time, you know. But a great crew, you know, a great staff of you know, some of my good friends, like being here. You know, we have a lot of fun out there on the water.
Yeah. And we didn't see a ton of boats, too. I mean, we probably saw a handful of boats as we drifted that day.
No, for the listeners, we're here Easter weekend.
Yeah.
So we were here Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it was, I mean, there was a healthy crowd, but it was not, there's no way I would call that crowded.
No,
not at all. We found spots all day long, every day.
Well, good. Bean, why don't you tell us a little bit about a setup? How would you set up your client to fish for the day?
Well, you know, usually, you know, up here, we like six weights. Just FYI, Ryan and I have been talking about it. These are big fish. You know, we don't want to fight them too long, and you have to lean into them pretty hard to set the hook. So, first off, you know, 9 foot, 6 weight. And then we run a, you know, 7.5 foot to 9 foot leader. Not a lot of weight out of the boat. You know, if you're going to be wade fishing, you probably put on a lot more, but maybe an AB out of the boat. And then right now I'm running 3 rockworms.
Mm-hmm.
Or annelids, as they're
annelids. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
An A. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
an annelid.
Yeah, red, purple, and then I'm running a wireworm as well. Egg patterns are working and leeches.
Yep.
Until midges. About midges. Yeah,
midges. We were popping them on the midges.
We love the midges.
Yeah. Until about mid-May, and then we start seeing PMDs, a lot of betas. You know, and it progresses throughout the year. And one thing to note, at least on the Gray Reef, it's a bottom-fed dam.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we keep our water temperatures nice all year. We rarely get above 68, 69. So that's
cold, clear water.
Yeah, have healthy fishery. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's fun in the summer, like Bean was touching on, because we do have so many different kinds of bugs.
Yeah.
You know, the caddis show up, the yellow sallies show up. You can start throwing dries, and you can, you know, start throwing streamers, you know, with those fish looking up for those dries. You can throw streamers to the bank and be a lot more productive than you can when the water's cold,
right?
Like it is now.
Well, let's kind of maybe back up, because I want to kind of get into a month by month. Let's give our listeners a viewpoint of the calendar here on the North Platte. So maybe, would you say January and February would kind of lump together? Would they be similar?
We could do that, yeah.
So what would January and February look like here on the North Platte?
Awesome fishing. Roll the dice on the weather.
Right. We're in Wyoming,
you know,
now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. You know, it can be cold, but it's awesome. Bean and I love fishing that time of year. You know, there's not that many people out there. You can go out, you know, jump in a wading spot. We throw the boats in. You know, we still float then as long as it's not frozen. You know, there are some sections, and if you are bringing a boat out, just check with us at the fly shop, because you can run into an ice jam, which isn't all that much fun. But yeah, you know, you're going to be fishing midges. You're going to be fishing rockworms. You know, you can get away with an egg pattern if you want to that time of year. But, you know, small stuff, but those fish are feeding hard.
Yeah.
You know, they're not quite ready to spawn, so they're really fat on midges and rockworms from over the winter. So,
and then March, April, I kind of lump them together.
Okay.
The fish are starting to move up on the spawning beds, and in April they're really, you know, really on them like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Still same thing, you know, rockworms, leeches, or annelids, I guess, and some midges in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
Annelids. Now, being an East Coast guy, I don't hear a lot about annelids. Like, where would you find annelids in rivers? Just Wyoming, or is it in the Rockies? How does that work?
Well, it's just a little tiny aquatic worm, and it is actually red.
Yep.
You know, we don't see any purple ones, but you can get away with the purple rockworm as well. And it's just this little tiny wiggly worm. And a lot of people, you know, when they tie that fly, will put like a peacock collar on it or like a bead, and it's counterproductive because all it is it really is red thread on a hook.
Yep.
You know, and we use D-rib or, you know, put some of the UV stuff on top of it to make it shine and make it look a little better. But you don't want to put a head on it or, you know, hackle it or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a worm. Exactly. It's
just felt bad.
It's just a really small San Juan worm, basically.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And Harrison, he said to me one night, he said, Tim, will you do a little couple videos? I want to record these videos tying these flies for the North Platte. I'm like, yeah, how do you want to do this? He's like, I'm going to do a time lapse. I'm like, oh, cool. So I finished one. I finished the second one. He's like, all right, we have about 5 seconds of film so far, Tim. He's like, those flies took no time at all. Like, this is my style of fly tying right here.
Yeah, that's like Bean and I's evening. You know, you're just whipping them out, throwing them in a pile, and you're done pretty quick.
Well, before we get off into May, I just want to get back on March, April here, because we floated over so many rainbows mm-hmm. on the spawn. Just think about, like, and we caught so many fish that in the pools. Mm-hmm. Just think yep. about if those fish are spread out, how many fish per square mile you're dealing with here. And we're talking about corporate fish.
Right.
I mm-hmm. mean, you guys have them dialed in where you're hooking up fish throughout the day. So it's super fun. And I'm thinking, man, there's so many fish on these reds. And you're catching fish in the pools. This is an incredible fishery. I mean, really, if you think about it, it's just an amazing fishery.
It really is. And, you know, that's one thing that I will mention is March and April. That's what we're on. Just watch the shallow gravel, guys, if you come out here and wade fish. You know, it is easy to jump on there and stick a couple fish, but they are making more fish for this amazing fishery. So, you know, leave the shallow water alone in April or March and April. Because those fish are spawning, and like Rob's talking about, there's plenty of fish in those deep water runs. So,
before we go on to May here, tell our listeners a little bit about how you're involved in the community in regards to standing up for the river. So I know you're involved in some different aspects of river management.
Well, we always do like the river cleanup, and the Bureau of Land Management has a guide meeting every year, and we kind of talk about things. You know, we've had some problems with illegal guiding up here, so... You know, I was part of getting those signs out there that basically say if your guide doesn't have this sticker, it's an illegal boat. And no, we're just trying to protect this fishery. You know, I mean, it's amazing. It's got to be one of the best fisheries in the country. And so as a guide service, we've just kind of tried to protect it. And we're not going to yell and scream at somebody who's on the red, but we will talk to them mm-hmm. and say, look, these fish are spawning, guys.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's easy to drill them, but, you know, try this fly in that run.
Yeah. Yep.
And usually people will respond to that. Not, we won't, you know, yell at them and say, get the hell off that water, you know, nothing like that. But if we can educate people, it will definitely protect this fishery.
Cool. So let's move on into May. Like, what's happening in May? Or I don't know if it's May, June together, or is it more May and then June?
I would say May on its own.
Yeah, it's starting to change over to where we're starting to get a little bit more buggy.
We get more water, mm-hmm. which we love.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this time of year, you guys fished 500 CFS, and... the fisher in that run, you know, it's all right there and it's awesome.
Shh, you're not supposed to tell people that it was easy.
it was really easy. Technical and
you guys Rob were amazing.
And Tim, Rob and Tim are awesome anglers.
Okay yeah.
Thanks
let's thank just you. Get that out there. And moving right along
but no, when we get some more water, it's a lot of fun because it turns into more of a boat fishery. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can fish the water that I like to call the middle water, which was the water that we rode. You know, we would fish those awesome runs, and then there'd be all that lakey stuff, mm-hmm. and you would row down to the next, you know, nice run. Well, when you get like 1,000 CFS, 1,500, 2,000, something in there, all that middle water comes into play. And I was talking to Tim the other morning that our North Platte fish just love inside corners.
Slow, lazy.
Yeah, like where when the water goes up, and is coming around those corners, if you can tuck the drift boat in on that inside corner and just start working your way out. You know, even if it's really slow water, there's a pot of fish there. You know, and then once you just kind of work your way out a little bit and do those lines, you'll find them. And it's really fun to fish those inside corners because, you know, they're not as descript as those runs, than those famous runs. And so, you know, if you do find a pot of fish, they're going to be there the next day when you float it again. You know, it's cool.
So this must be when all those fish are kind of getting off those reds and start spreading out through the whole river. And then you guys kind of know where they're headed and what they're doing.
Yep. And getting those big fat silver fish, they start jumping. You know, they
Cromers.
Start launching out of the water, which everybody loves, you know.
We had a few of that.
Absolutely.
We had quite a bit of jumping.
It's cool to see those giant fish just go airborne.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, Tim's like, are we steelheading or are we rainbow trout fishing?
Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean, we're in Fremont, but the first two or three fish we catch, it's just like, set that hook. They just went airborne immediately. And we're like, mm-hmm. what's going on? It was a chilly day. It was, you know, upper 40s, low 50s at one point. That was, I think, the high we got to. But when it was just in those low 40s to start off and we just were banging these big rainbows, it was just insane.
Oh, yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah.
So now we're off with the fish are spreading out. You guys are working the inside corners in May. Some of those deep, some of those longer runs, the fish are kind of spreading out. What happens in June?
June, we start to shift from, I got to back up to May just a little bit.
Okay.
Favorite bug in May is the blue-winged olive.
Okay.
The blue-winged olive shows up hard. We can get some dry fly days in May if you get a day like you boys had today with this, you know, clouds and a little bit of rain. You know, those fish will start looking up in May. But, you know, as we go from May into June, the hatch shifts from blue-winged olives to PMDs. We have, you know, tons of those PMDs, so you just kind of shift from, you know, a little olive nymph to a little tan nymph and, you know, be looking for heads. It's really fun because there's so many mayflies on this river that, you know, when you do get a day where the fish are looking up, it's, we always keep dry rods in the boat, you know, because in the spring we really are doing a lot of nymphing. Bean and I both keep a dry rod and a streamer rod in the boat just because we're always looking for those opportunities.
Yeah, and then we start looking more towards the bank. We move from the middle of the river, you know, especially if we have good water, we start going from the inside out or inside corners to the middle of the river. We start looking towards the bank. I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shorten up, light rigs. Those fish are going to be right on the edges, and you can turn around. It's nice to turn your boat around and look at the bank for a while instead mm-hmm. of the middle of the river.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's a light rig? Whenever, because when we first got here, we asked Ryan, what tippet do we need? He said, well, we're going 2X, maybe a little 3X. I'm like,
yeah.
So what's light to you, Bean?
3X. Okay. You know, I might put a
mid. I think Bean was 7.
We're fishing 6X today. These are guys who taught us 3X.
Well, I told you to leave that at home.
But, yeah, that's like floss.
But no, I think Bean was just talking about like a mini rig, basically, you know, a short rig, okay. Lightweight.
Gotcha.
You know, same tippets, you know, short rig, lightweight towards the bank.
Still need that 3X, 4X maybe for some of these fish. Actually, they fight harder as the water warms up, so
mm-hmm.
you got to keep that cable on there.
Yeah.
So that's May, uh-huh. and then into June, you have your PMDs you mentioned?
Yep, PMDs, and we start seeing, you know, you can fish basically those rock worms still. You know, June is great. A lot of people book in June because you still have, you know, your rock worms, and the fish are still, you know, coming off the spawn, but the weather gets a little bit nicer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Wyoming, the wind can blow a little bit. The wind starts to taper off in June. June, July, August, the wind definitely tapers off.
Can you fish right through the summer? I mean, obviously, yes. Tailwater, so
yep.
The water stays a little cooler.
Yep. I mean, on low water years, we as a guide service always watch water temps. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to go out if the water is too warm and we're going to harm fish. You know, the Game and Fish actually doesn't regulate that. You know, Game and Fish, a lot of places will go to like a hoot owl thing where you can only fish till 11 a.m. because the water temps get hot. They do that a lot in Montana.
Huge
but
Montana,
we do not have those regulations. And so, you know, the other guide services and I kind of got together and said, look, we're not going to fish this river if you're going to be releasing fish that aren't going to swim. You know, so we watch those water temps, but it hasn't happened in a lot of years.
No.
You know, it's like being touched on. It's a bottom release. Cold, clear water. And yes, I mean, the fishing is awesome all the way through summer.
Yeah, August we do get some moss, but it's real manageable. There's big plumes, and then there's a little highway right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, wade fishing is tough at that time of year just because you can't get to those little plumes. But and then the dry fly, their trichos are off. So we get rid of the nymph rigs as much as possible.
Yeah, and if folks come out in July and August, you know, I would say probably focus a little more downstream. Because those big weed mats, like Bean was talking about, grow right at Gray Reef Dam. You know, and people that don't know any better go right there. And all that vegetation holds the water back, Rob. I mean, if you wouldn't recognize those holes that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does. It's got, you know, weeds on the edge. The fish are still there. And you can still catch a bunch of fish. But, you know, if you start focusing a little further downstream, like below Government Bridge, there's amazing wade fishing. And for whatever reason, it doesn't have those grass mats. It still has those classic ripples that everybody likes to fish.
Yeah. So there's your summer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then we're on into September.
Oh, best time of the year.
Is that your favorite?
Yeah. They drop the river usually around September 1st, throw hoppers to the bank.
Hoppers?
Yeah. But my favorite part is the streamers. I mean, I'm a streamer junkie, so
mm-hmm.
we start chucking meat at the bank, and the browns are getting ready to spawn, so they're active, and we can...
Are we still on the leeches as far as streamers, or what are you thinking?
I like white. Anything white. That's just because I can see it, and my clients can see it. So they fish. I feel like they fish it better. You know, they can see it swimming in the water.
And you can see the fish eat it, which everybody likes.
Get that visual.
Unless they pull it out of their face, yeah.
Articulated, straight shank, does it not matter?
It depends on the day, yeah. Sometimes I like just a straight shank. You know, if they're having a hard time landing a fish, I'll go to a straight shank, longer fly. But, you know, there's a couple different choices on there. The articulated, you know, obviously swim better. They look better in the water. But you can get some good weight on some of those, like a Goldie, like a size 2 or 4 Goldie single. They sink like a spark plug, and I like that too. So
and let me double check too. You're allowed to fish up to 3 flies on a rig here?
Correct.
Okay.
I wouldn't fish 3 streamers though.
No,
2.
That might be tough to catch.
A rock worm and a couple midges is okay.
Yeah.
No, that's
yeah.
And, you know, if you're are going to go to like a three-fly rig with like the rockworm and the midges, you know, just shorten the connection between those two bottom midges up a little bit so it's not, you know, too nasty to cast. Yeah. And it doesn't wrap around the fish when you hook it. You mm-hmm. know, if you get some big space between those little midges, it's kind of tough because a lot of times those fish will get tangled and poked, mm-hmm. you know.
Done some doubles. We had a few doubles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Doubles are fun. Everybody.
Didn't Ryan have like a spin move out when?
Oh, this famous the super spin guy. Move.
I'm not talking about that.
We weren't talking about that.
No,
no, we. No, it's say, a patent pending.
Patent pending. Yeah. Well, I remember one time I hooked up. My fish came straight up out of the air and actually took a left and jumped underneath your rod.
Yes.
We ended up switching spots in yes. the boat.
Yeah.
And you caught. You hooked up.
Yeah, mine was like 7 inches larger than yours.
No, the spin move is basically when the angler in the front of a drift boat hooks a big fish and it goes straight upstream. All you do is flip the drift boat 180 and put the guy in the back of the boat downstream so he can make another cast down double. Right into the run and you can hook up a double.
Double up. Yeah. And a lot mm-hmm. of laughing happens after the doubles.
Oh, we loved that. That was a blast.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a couple pictures here and there too.
A few, yeah.
So now we're into the fall. Mm-hmm. October, November the same or October then November?
October is awesome. But, you know, again, the weather can get a little dicey towards the end of it. Towards Halloween was when we usually start getting our snowstorms. Yeah, similar, same thing. September and October is the second coming of the blue-winged olive, which seems to be, you know, the hatch that these fish are most responsive to. You know, the second coming of the blue wing, you know, we're fishing these lower sections, but these big rainbows will pod up. I mean, you'll see a pod of 20-inch fish. You know, sometimes they look like they're grazing like sheep. You know, their feeding lane is a couple feet wide, and they're all just, you know, grabbing bugs as they're going by, and it's pretty cool to see. That's my favorite time of year to dry fly fish. Then
October.
Yes. Yep. October on those cloudy days. As we work into November, drift boat prices get cheaper again. We give a discount to everybody. I think it's $90 off. Fishing's still great, but you know, there again,
trying to get
the weather
out.
Can be kind of dicey. So what a lot of our clients in Denver do is kind of watch the 2 week forecast and give us a call because we can throw it together, you know, pretty last minute in November because of the size of our staff and Bean and I ain't got much going on. So
well, we'll be steelheading in November.
Yeah, well, the first part of November we're steelheading. So, but yeah, we can always, you know, put it together if you see that weather window. You know, November can be amazing. Also in November, we go out to the Miracle Mile because that's when the browns run out of the lake.
So that's a great look at the first 11 months, guys. Why don't you tell us a little bit about December? Because I think I remember, Ryan, you had talked about December being another great month, except it also could be a little cold.
December's awesome. Yeah, we love fishing the mile. Like I said, there's still those lake run fish in there. And it seems like in the last couple of years, they get later and later. You know, dudes will go up to fish the brown run in November and we'll sneak out there in December and they're there. I had some great days on the reef in December. No boats. You know, we're getting those brown trout out of the dark green water. You know, they're staging up to go spawn up there. And it's really cool to see the gray reef, all those famous runs and stuff, just shift from, you know, rainbows to browns. Like the mile, they run up river as well, but they just are running from, like, the narrows area up to the gray reef section.
You know, and we don't like to talk about, you know, record fish, but just so people understand what can be possible, I know there's a couple we talked about the, you know, your record rainbow, that's not mm-hmm. necessarily the river, but your record rainbow is...
It was 13 pounds on the Boga grip. Jeez. Yeah, we lifted him up, hung him on the Boga and then got him right back in the water just to see how heavy it was because it was just a tub. And that fish ate a streamer. You know, our rainbows, you guys would love them because they act a lot like brown trout, you know, later in the fall. Like down on these lower sections, you can throw streamers all day to the bank and you'll just catch these slobs that are getting fat on crawdads because that's their major food source. We don't have sculpins, but, you know, they love chasing down that lobster lunch. And then the biggest brown that I've personally caught was we did length and girth on a fish that actually my wife caught. But no, I tied up a fly, this big nasty streamer, and it was just not too long after her and I got married. And I said, yeah, let's go get this thing wet. Let's float through the narrows. And she ended up picking up this just football-sized brown trout. It wasn't super long, but I mean, just so fat. Its little adipose fin looked like a thumb. I mean, it had fat growing. It had fat growing all the way into its adipose fin. But
I love it.
But that fish length and girth was about 11 pounds. So.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm excited that actually Liz holds the record in the family for brown trout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The funny thing is, you know, I know that Liz can row a lot better than she does. You know,
if she forgets real quick,
she'll catch a nice big fish and then be like, "Honey, you want me to row?" You know, and then the boat will start spinning, and I'll be like, "No, just let me do it." But she's smart. I mean, yeah, she knows what she's doing. I know she can row better than that, but then she gets to catch all the fish. So,
how long you guys been married?
10 years.
10 years. Okay, mm-hmm. Phenomenal.
Yep.
Well, cool. How did you actually get started fly fishing?
Well, I started fishing with my dad and grandpa when I was 5 on a little river up outside of Wheatland, Wyoming, called the North Laramie. It's kind of our family water. We have a little cabin up there, and dad just used to turn me loose with a few flies and a rod and just turn us loose on those rivers, and that was just so much fun hiking up and down, you know. Usually we'd break all the flies off in the tree and come back, but you know, we'd have to come back with a fish to cook for dinner, you know, at that age. But no, started up there and then started floating the North Platte when I was a kid. Mom used to be the shuttle driver. She'd drop me and a buddy off and pick us up at the end. And
you have a drifty?
Yeah, my uncle had this huge drift boat that you couldn't even see out of. You know, it was the highest sided drift boat ever made.
So you're tight line nymphing the whole time.
Well, yeah, where you didn't know where you were, you could be sitting on the bank. You know, but no, I mean this boat was not good for wind. You know, all the guides and I row low profile boats, and this was the opposite of that. It was great fun, you know, and that was back when people weren't really even floating Gray Reef. You know, we didn't see many drift boats floating down. There was a couple boat ramps, but, you know, I was about 15 years old and we'd float that river and it was a blast. We were getting some big fish, and it was kind of the front end of Gray Reef becoming a blue ribbon fishery. You know, that was back when they just started doing the flush and flows. So
cool.
It was a lot of fun. Went to school at Montana State in Bozeman. Got a 4-year degree in business management in 7 short years of fishing way too much. Yeah, I had a lot of fun on that water up there as well. Came back here and bought the guide service. And the rest is history.
And then
it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. How about you, Bean? How did you start fishing, fly fishing, that type of thing?
Same type of deal with my dad. I was in high school, though, in a little creek. And I didn't get the bug real bad until about my sophomore year in college. And then from then on, it was just every second I had, I'd be out fishing, you know, hitting the lakes by Laramie and University of Wyoming there, and the North Platte down by Saratoga, and then come up here on the weekend so my mom could do my laundry and I could go fishing. And then kind of continued from there. Started out with opposite Orion, like a little PT boat, a little personal pontoon boat.
Okay.
And same thing back then in the 90s. You wouldn't see another soul on the river, you know. You'd be blown against the bank and just walk your boat down for a minute. And then, you know, back then we'd throw a streamer off the boat and kick across. And then, you know, you catch fish. Then you switch rods and nymph the run, you know. It was great.
Yeah, cool.
Back in the bite me bugger and a rusty scud days. Yeah. That's all you needed. You wouldn't even put on a split shot.
Yeah.
It's just a woolly bugger, and then you drop a scud off of it, they just nail it.
And it probably still work, but you know how things are today, the newer.
Yeah, you can't use that stuff.
No, it's too.
And the halfback, that went by the wayside too.
I tried one this year.
Yeah.
Didn't work. No.
That fish looked at it and said, "That's so 90s. Yeah. I'm not going to hit that.
How dare you throw this?"
My grandparents wouldn't even eat that, yeah.
Bean, how long have you been guiding with Wyoming Fly Fishing?
About 12 years.
Really?
Part-time for the first 6. You know, I had another career in my life, and then things happened where I was fortunate enough to get to do what I love for a living now. So
that's awesome.
Last 6 years have been full-time, and Liz and Ryan have been kind enough to keep me around.
That's sweet.
Even though I've tried to quit a couple times. You know.
Well, didn't I fire you?
Yeah. Well,
a couple times?
Yeah.
And rehired. No, that's the positive.
Yeah.
He just keeps showing up, you know.
You're also kind of particular about who you put out with your service as well, too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of guides approach us, but, you know, we do a pretty extensive interview process. You have to, you know, get through me. You know, I'll do a verbal interview, and then Liz does a verbal interview. That's the second interview, and then you have to basically guide me on the river and, you know, show me that you know how to. Well, I mean, a lot of guys I can kind of tell, you know, within the first 5 minutes. It's funny because, you know, guiding this many years, I've ran into some pretty funny situations, you know, so I can put him through the ringer, man. You know, like coming into some really fast water, I'll just shake the rod and make it a big rat's nest and be like, well, I can't fish this hole. You know, won't you untangle this so I can fish? You know, while he's got to steer and not crash. And the right answer is, you know, telling me to sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and we've put together an amazing staff. We have guides that have come from Jackson Hole, guides that have come down from Bozeman, you know, good friends of mine in the industry, and orient them to the river. And, it's awesome to guide with this much talent in the barn because, you know, I learn stuff from them. You know, we bounce ideas off each other. It's really cool because at the end of the day, we sit around, have a couple beers and be like, where were you? You know, how did you do this? And how did this fish? And, you know, there's no secrets between us guides at the shop. You know, we're always bouncing things off each other. And so we usually have the beat of what's going on the river.
Before we close, why don't we give our listeners just a visual on how they could get here? What's the easiest way to get to Casper?
Through Denver.
Okay.
You know, Denver is about 3.5 hours from where we're sitting right now on I-25. It's got an 80-mile-an-hour speed limit in Wyoming now, so it goes pretty quick. Basically, flying to Denver and renting a car is what a lot of our clients do that are traveling.
That's what we did, for sure.
From the East Coast. And it's a pretty drive, you know, and it's nice to have a vehicle when you get up here. You know, if you want to fish in the evening, if you want to go out to Tim's favorite spot, Fremont Canyon.
Don't tell
on your
them.
Own.
No, that's not my favorite spot.
No, his favorite spot is Jay's Bar and Grill.
No. They got cold beer there. But you can fly into Casper. We're happy to pick anybody up at the airport, take you to the lodge or whatever. But it's nice to have a car if you need to pick something up, you know, run into town or go fishing in the evening. You know, in the summer, we have really long days and the evening can fish amazing. It's awesome. So, you know, you get a full day with us and you can just pop out for that, you know, last cast, you know, the magic hour of the day and throw some dry flies. So,
speaking of evening and dry fly fishing, talk a little bit about the dry fly. Can you fish right off the back here? Because, I mean, we're staring at the water as we speak.
Yes.
Is this fishable? I mean, I know it's a little muddy now.
The color's a little off right now, but no, this run right here fishes great. Yeah. You're going to see them podding up, you know, in the summertime down here in the tail out. Basically, the run itself is just at the bottom of a big set of braids, which is really pretty under the mountain. And like you were talking about, the sun sets back that way. And there's no real, you know, houses back here, so the view is great. Yeah, the water right here as it comes into town is awesome. You know, certain times of the year, it's one of our favorite floats.
Okay.
Yep.
That would be awesome. At the end of a guided day, maybe come back, have some dinner. Off the back, you get a beautiful backyard. You get a fire pit for your clients.
Yeah.
And you just cast a dry fly into the evening.
Yeah, or we
back
can,
deck.
You know, we've done trips that where the guys are staying here, and we float them here on a half day. And you can eat lunch, you know, go inside, hang out for a minute, have a beer, and then just jump back in the boat. Because the water, even in, you know, as you go into town, is still quality. You know, still
that.
Got those runs.
Yeah,
and
that
stuff.
Was kind of like that secret that we heard coming up.
Yeah. I wasn't going to mention it. Yeah.
So it's been great to have you guys, and it's been great to have you on the podcast. I appreciate it. Now, before we close, why don't you talk a little bit about how this whole dry fly lodge works with your clients?
Well, basically, it's our lodge vacation rental on the river just outside of Casper. The great thing about this is full kitchen, all that. You know, if you don't want to buy all the groceries, stock it, do the full meals and stuff, you're 5 minutes away from the best steakhouse in town. You know, staying a little closer to town is nice. You know, staying out at Gray Reef proper has its advantages too. But, you know, the fly shop's right across the road. Your guide's going to give you a ride in his truck, you know, so it's pretty easy access just staying close to Casper. But as far as booking the dry fly, staying here, you can go on to VRBO and check it all out. There's a bunch of pictures of it on there, or, you know, just call Liz on the guideline.
I have to give a picture here because we're looking in front of like this beautiful fireplace. The decor is phenomenal. The artwork in this place is spectacular.
Yeah, we were really fortunate. We're staying in the Drake. I believe that's the name of the top floor. So we got the penthouse suite, it feels like. We have three bedrooms. There's a deck every morning. We wake up early, have coffee on the deck before we go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really just convenient. Everything's kind of taken care of here.
Yeah, beautiful kitchen, the decor. I mean, obviously this is Liz's handiwork, I'm sure, because...
Yeah, no, I just... did what I was told.
She had cut flowers for us in the table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She takes care of all of us. She's got a big job.
It's not just you guys. It's every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
So I could see, and if a group wanted to book out maybe the top and bottom, I mean, you get enough here for how many total if you did top and bottom?
Yeah, it's nice. There's 3 bedrooms up. So 5 separate beds up in 3 bedrooms. And then downstairs, there's 2 big bedrooms with 2 beds in each and a pull-out sofa. So 10 people in their own bed, basically.
Unbelievable.
And
big group come up on the North Platte. Mm-hmm. You can get yourself your guide service. You can do some DIY.
Mm-hmm. A group that big is really nice through our guide service because, you know, especially like as you get into the summer when we have that higher water, you know, we can take a group of 10. And if you guys really like each other, you can fish together and heckle each other on the river in 5 of our guide boats. Or we have enough sections of river that you can still, everybody goes a different section.
Mix it up each day.
Yeah, yep, and just float a different one each day and get out there and kind of find your own little slice of heaven, you know.
That's cool. Well, how do people find you? What is the website, Ryan?
It's PlatteRiverGuides.com. Or give Lizzie a call. She loves to talk to people on the phone at 307-277-6282. That's the guideline, and we can give you a fishing report. We can book your lodging. We can set you up with one of our guides.
So cool. Well, we met at the Denver show. I encourage people to come out to the Denver show, meet Ryan in person, meet Bean, meet Liz. Incredible booth. I love the huge backdrop you have in the
big
skull.
Yeah.
The skull with the fly rods.
Great logo.
The Pirates of the Platte.
Yeah, I picked up my shirt and hat, so I'll be proudly wearing it. And proudly talking about this fishery because it's so cool. I mean, our listeners are diehard fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know a better experience. I mean, there's a ton of great experiences. We are fortunate enough to do a lot of them. But this is right up there.
Oh, we'll be back, Rob. Yeah, there's no question. We'll be back
here. We actually want to bring a group up here. I mean, you're talking about the 10. You know, Tim and I are talking about putting a group of 10 together and coming back and seeing you. So.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, diehard fishermen. That's what we like to do as a guide service. You know, if you want to stay at the Dry Fly, you know, it's not that expensive. You know, we're not going to lump it all together and give you a big number.
Right.
You know, it's pretty affordable, and, you know, the fishing's always good. You can stay at the motel down the street and save a few bucks.
Yep.
But, you know, we as a guide service, we want to fish with everybody that, you know, from the people sleeping in the tent.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to jack the prices up on you. And, you know, we want everybody to come out and enjoy this river. I also will mention that we will be at the New Jersey show.
Sweet.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing the fly fishing show in New Jersey. Yeah, we're going to come out.
Yeah.
We're going to come out and see you guys. So we will be out there. I don't have the dates of that in front of me.
New Jersey is going to be the third weekend in January, I'm pretty sure. But it'll be up on flyfishingshow.com.
Cool.
Yep. So come see us at that show. Look for the big skull with the trout spots.
And we're going to do some videos. Harrison Hughes of Black Mountain Cinema is putting together some nice videos of our trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're excited to get those out on flyfishingjourneys.com. And we're going to put all the show notes, the links, how to get a hold of you guys. That's all going to go in the show notes. So it's been an amazing experience. Thank you for having us here at the Dry Fly, showing us around the reef. Before we close, why don't you tell the listeners why it's called the Gray Reef? Is there a story there?
No, there's not.
No one knows.
It's just the Gray Reef.
Yeah.
I tried to look it up online and I cannot find it. I have no idea.
We Googled it and nobody knows.
I mean, the mysterious Gray Reef.
Yeah, there's a lot of fossils around here, and my best guide bullshit answer would be that there was a reef here millions of years ago and it was gray in color.
Wait a minute, that's what you told me.
But he said it with confidence. It was right after he said we're going to catch a bunch
that's
of
better
big fish,
than mine,
so it must be true.
Well, it was true, because we did catch a lot of great fish.
That's right.
Guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and follow us on Facebook. And please, like and share our podcast with your friends. For past episodes or to read our journal blog posts, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you are on this journey with us.